Is it that time, Michael?
It is. Welcome to the New Spirit Radio Show by Nova Spiritist. And I am your host, Michael McClellan, with my co-host, Tom Bigley, coming to you live from Campbell, California now, as we will every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And thank you so much for tuning in. And also thank you to all the folks that listen to the archives, tune in when they can.
That's better.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing excellent, Michael. Are we ready for another show?
We are ready, definitely.
All right. Oh, yeah, excellent. All right.
We are in our new offices, our little offices now, in Campbell, and it's actually pretty nice for a small little office. So we do only have two lines, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we're also having our spiritual services at the Campbell Community Center again, and we haven't been there since 2001. So it's interesting, kind of come full circle back, 12 years later, back in Campbell. So, and good to be here. And so thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and let's get going.
Okay. We got, first things first, we've got more of our blessings from the other side. Where are we? This is number four. We're on number four this week. All right, let's get started with Sylvia.
We have a tradition in our family that helps us watch for those moments of joy together and point them out. And I'm thrilled that it's become as much of a habit among my grandchildren as it is among us adults, because it's a habit that will stay with them all their lives. It was originally inspired by the existence of the scanning machine. The scanning machine is one of our first stops on the other side, and in it we view in three-dimensional hologram form each and every instant of our lives, and if we like, the lives of our loved ones as well. Bearing that eventuality in mind, whenever there is a glimpse of joy, some freeze frame of a perfect sight or feeling that we wouldn't have missed for anything, no matter how significant or trivial, one of us is guaranteed to say, "Flag this." The translation of "flag this" is, "Here's something we want to linger over at the scanning machine." As you start each new day, promise yourself to watch for every event or feeling you want to flag, to relive and cherish someday at the scanning machine. Keep a journal of them if you like. Whatever it takes to start the habit of anticipating joy, not disappointment, not when or until, but right now, today, inside of you, where the God center of your joyful spirit lies, waiting for you to notice. Giving what you're deprived of is a very simple way to find joy. Here are a few examples of what I mean. If you need a friend, be a friend. I promise, someone you know right now needs someone they can trust, someone to talk to, someone's shoulder to cry on, someone to laugh with. Be that friend for them. If you're lonely, end someone's loneliness. There's a hospital or nursing home or children's shelter near you, and there's someone in it who never has a visitor, never has anyone who stops by to say hello without getting paid for it, never receives a greeting card or a freshly picked flower or a book to read or a toy to play with. Be that visitor for them. If you're hungry, feed someone. Every time you're at the grocery store, spend one extra dollar for a can of soup or a package of cookies or some other item with a long shelf life and set it aside. And then once a month, anonymously deliver that food you've gathered to a nearby shelter, a family you know of that's down on its luck, a rescue mission, the shut-in down the street, or a worthy charity like the Red Cross or the Salvation Army. The hungrier we are, the harder it can get to believe in angels. Be someone's angel. If you're grieving, comfort someone. At your church, in your neighborhood, in some grief support group not far away, through your local television or radio news station, or even on the internet, there's someone who's suffering from the same singular aching pain of loss you are and needs to be held and assured by someone who understands that they don't have to go through it alone. Be that comfort for them. Again, you get the idea. Anyone who already practices giving what you're deprived of will back me up on the fact that there is no joy quite like filling the void in someone else's life that you've been feeling in yours. No one but you even needs to know that your motives are selfish and that what you end up getting back will be 10 times what you've given. That can be your own private, joyful secret. Pick a dream, any dream. One of my most unforgettable clients was a sparkling 68-year-old woman named Elizabeth. She was about to take an extended trip to Africa and wanted to be sure her children and grandchildren would be okay while she was gone. I couldn't keep the delight out of my voice when I realized and said, "You're going to Egypt to work." She grinned ear to ear. It seems that she had just received her college degree in archaeology and had so impressed her professor that he invited her on a dig he'd been planning for 6 years. "I've been fascinated by archaeology since I was a child. I don't know why," she told me. "I do," I said. "That's your occupation on the other side." That didn't surprise her at all. She went on to say that at the time she graduated from high school, there was no money for her to go to college to pursue her passion. "Besides, my parents told me I wasn't smart enough for college. I'd just be wasting my time. My late husband must have told me 1,000 times that a woman's place was in the home. And my children and grandchildren have been telling me for years that I'm too old for all this." I asked her how she managed not to let all of that negative input discourage her. She winked and said, "Easy." I didn't believe them. I still have the postcard she sent me from Egypt 2 months later, where she was having the time of her life. Elizabeth was a brilliant example of refusing to accept negative input, which I call determinism. Determinism is that ridiculous list of purported truths about ourselves that a few careless people use to try to limit our self-confidence and predetermine our failure. "You're not smart enough. Your place is in the home, and you're too old," define determinism beautifully, as do some of the so-called facts my mother used to tell me about myself, including my personal favorite, "Face it, Sylvia, you'll never have a career." More importantly, Elizabeth was also a brilliant example of the utter joy to be found in making a dream come true. She was honestly one of the most joyful, inspiring people I've ever met. It's in her honor that I offer the following exercise, which is just one more giant but simple step on the path towards that joy I so wish for you. I want you to write down every bit of determinism you've ever been told or ever told yourself. Anything and everything that, as you sit there today, makes you feel unable, limited, less than, and incapable. Then take that list, shred it, and throw it in the nearest garbage can where it belongs, while you remind yourself silently or out loud, "Sorry, I'm not buying it anymore. I was created by God, and God doesn't make junk." Now, rid of that determinism nonsense, I want you to list every dream you've ever dreamed for yourself, from as far back as you can remember. It doesn't matter how big or small or silly or unlikely they seem. Just write them down without judging them. Whether it was becoming an astronaut or taking dog grooming lessons or reading the entire works of Shakespeare. cross off the ones that no longer interest you and add any new ones that occur to you as you go along. Once your list is complete, please, I swear to you, you'll thank me later. Choose the one that seems the most accessible and go after it with every ounce of passion in you. Don't you dare give up until you've satisfied that dream. Then return to your list. Draw a star beside it and choose the most accessible of those remaining to go after next. Whether you end up with one star or a whole page full of them, be proud of what you've accomplished. Thank yourself for the realized dream and, above all, celebrate to the core of your spirit the exquisite joy of knowing you loved yourself and the God Center inside you enough to try. And here's a joyous affirmation. I feel the golden light from my Father God shining on me, a gift of His perpetual unconditional love, for which I will thank Him from this day forward by pursuing and sharing the joy I knew before and will know again in His presence on the other side when my purpose here is finished.
Wow, that's a good one. A nice ending to a lot of nice information and to something to remind us, something we can repeat to ourselves and help reprogram our mind. And as she was talking, it was reminding me of, I know years ago, talking with Francine, Sylvia's spirit guide, she had told me that one of the things that I had been programmed with, she talked about form of determinism, was an insult from my parents. And for the life of me, I haven't been able to figure it out. I thought I did, but now I think it's still there, and I'm, unrooting it, as it were, little by little, and understanding that, you know what, we continue learning all the time.
Yes, we definitely are. Life is definitely a learning experience, and, this philosophy is very empowering and helps us have the tools and get through the hard times and support each other. And like Sylvia said, list out every dream you have and go for it. I remember earlier working with Sylvia, and sometimes, I would hesitate or not, and she would come by and just say, "Oh, Michael, just do it." Yes, ma'am. Yes. Before Nike said it, Sylvia was saying it to me. Just do it.
Well, should we just do it to the next one then?
Yes, let's go for it.
Okay, well, I'm just doing it.
Guilt is a complicated and incredibly powerful force. A little guilt is healthy. Too much guilt is destructive. The absence of guilt is spiritually disastrous. As grateful as we should be that we're capable of feeling it, we should be even more diligent about learning to get rid of it. If there's any other emotion on earth that shares those qualities, I can't imagine what it is. I do want to get one special category of humans who feel no guilt out of the way so that I can spend time focused on the rest of us. I have to brace myself for this because every time Lindsay and I write about these people, we're subjected to their protests in the form of negative energy, from inexplicable static that makes our taped discussions of them inaudible to their shutting off the electricity, but only in the room we're working in. Just as most of us can powerfully project light, this group can powerfully project darkness, which is why they're known as the dark side. The dark side are the only people among us who never have and never will experience guilt, let alone any other genuine human emotion. In psychiatric terms, they're sociopaths and psychopaths, remorseless, amoral, devoid of a conscience, untreatable, insidious, and immune to any efforts at rehabilitation, since it's impossible to rehabilitate anyone whose only motive is to incapacitate any light that crosses their path. Darkness, after all, can't exist where there's light, and that fact drives the dark side's lives more than any other. God is not to blame for the existence of the dark side. Dark entities are godless, not because God created them that way or because he turned away from them, but because they made a conscious decision to turn away from him in this or some past lifetime. If you've ever loved someone who ignored you or refused to acknowledge that you even exist, you understand the relationship between God and the dark side. It would be so nice to tell you that dark entities are uncommon or that there's an easy way to spot them the moment you meet them. Sadly, though, it's probable that you have one in your life right now, or that you're just trying to recover from one and are still trying to figure out where you went wrong. Since they can't hurt you, physically or emotionally, until they're close to you, the dark side can be some of the most charming people you'll ever meet when you're first getting to know them, and you might find it uncanny how much they have in common with you. You're not apt to notice for a while that they took all their cues from you about how incredibly alike the two of you are. Only when they've secured your trust and you've let down your guard will they begin to reveal that they're really not much more than very gifted mimics, duplicating human behavior without ever feeling it, and capable of brutal coldness, cruelty, deviousness, and abuse, all designed to make you feel utterly powerless, and more to the point, extinguish your light to help spread that darkness a little farther. The biggest mistake is to fall into the trap of believing that it is our mission as spiritual, God-centered people to understand them, change them, and ultimately save them from themselves. Take it from someone who's tried more than once to rescue a dark entity and almost got destroyed in the process. Don't waste one more minute of your time, your energy, your well-meaning spirit, or your kind heart. Do as Christ told us. Shake the dust off your feet and walk away. It's not that the dark side is more powerful than we are. They're not. It's just that in order to beat them at their own game, we would have to abandon God, our faith, our conscience, which would make us exactly like them, and then guess what? They've won anyway. Don't worry, they do get theirs in the end. Instead of going home to the blessed paradise among our loved ones, spirit guides, angels, and messiahs in the divine presence of God on the other side, when this lifetime ends, they go through a place called the left door and right back in utero again to start another life without having learned a thing. So now that we've learned to be thankful that we're capable of feeling guilty, we can explore the unfortunate fact that most of us feel it far more often than we should or need to. I do mean we, too, believe me. I don't remember the last time I boarded a plane for a lecture tour without feeling like the lowest creature on earth as my grandchildren's heart-wrenching cries of, "No, Bagda, please don't leave us," echoed in my ears. You'd think I didn't know that they're invariably giggling, swimming, playing, and romping with their menagerie of pets again before my flight even takes off. The guilt we all experience from time to time that's much harder to deal with is the guilt of a loss or careless moment, something we did or didn't do, something said or unsaid that leaves a lingering pain, which, like all emotional pain, has an inevitable impact and consequence somewhere, somehow. And while the ability to feel guilt is healthy, seeking guilt out, embracing it, and leaving it unresolved are like tying an anvil to our spirit, locking our life into a cell made of hurt, where no sun can come in. And the irony is, we're the only ones with a key to let ourselves out. Remember, we're on this earth for one reason, to learn lessons for the progress of our soul, as part of our commitment to God. Every bit of unresolved guilt we carry with us is another unlearned lesson, and we can't move on to new lessons until we've conquered the ones we're already faced with. So developing the skill of releasing both warranted and unwarranted guilt isn't just helpful, it's essential to our spirit success in this lifetime. If you're struggling with guilt when you truly know you did the very best you could in a given situation and meant no harm, yell, "Stop!" the instant so much as a word of self-doubt enters your mind. You'll be pleasantly surprised at how quickly you'll break the unwarranted guilt habit, if only because you're so tired of hearing yourself yell, "Stop!" Frustrating as this may be to hear, revenge is one of the most time-wasting, self-destructive sources of guilt you can possibly indulge in. In fact, you may have already read my favorite quote on the subject of revenge, an ancient Chinese saying that goes, "When you seek revenge, you might as well dig two graves, one for the other person and one for yourself." When someone wrongs us, it's their mistake and their lesson to learn, and the inevitability of karma, and their chart guarantees that sooner or later they will learn. But if we seek revenge, we're essentially taking time out from our chart to concern ourselves with theirs, which is not unlike neglecting our own homework assignment and failing a course because we were so busy doing an enemy's homework instead. With the exception of the dark side, we're all on this earth for the ultimate purpose of leaving it better than we found it, and to forward the progress of our spirits. There is no progress to be found in emulating and perpetuating hurtful behavior. There is only precious ground to be lost along our spirit's eternal path, more distance instead of less between us and our ultimate spiritual potential that we'll only have to make up for later. Finally, if you're feeling guilty because you've committed what everyone or the Bible defines as a sin, please believe me, the word sin has come to be used as a part of religious and social dogma for no other purpose than to make us behave and to try to separate good people from bad people, with no regard whatsoever for Christ's admonition to judge not, lest ye be judged. When dogma becomes too much of a priority, it causes us to stop thinking logically, and even worse, it overpowers the faith that is supposed to be the real heart of every religion. Sin means missing the mark. It means we've let ourselves down and offended our own conscience. And that's all it means. It doesn't mean God is sitting there scowling at us and reaching for his imaginary list of punishments. It doesn't mean he loves us one bit less, and it certainly doesn't mean we're less worthy or important than any of his other children on earth. If you're reaching for your Bible now to prove me wrong and to point to things that you know it specifically says are sins, period, that's fine, as long as you don't just selectively scan it to find the verses that support your personal position. Read every word of it, from beginning to end, and then tell me that you believe it's meant to be taken literally, especially the Old Testament, and that every bit of it is a valid guideline for what's right and what's wrong, what's a sin and what's not. Leviticus 18:22, for example, is a popular verse for people to point to as proof that homosexuality is an abomination. But according to Leviticus 11:10, eating shellfish is an abomination too. Do you really believe that? No one loves the Bible more than I do. I've read all 20 versions, some of them many times. I guess that's why it makes my hair stand on end to see it used as an excuse for prejudice, bigotry, judgmentalism, and why I'm ending this section on guilt with a reminder. We're here to learn, and in the course of learning, we've written plenty of mistakes into our charts. That's more than enough guilt for us to tackle and overcome without adding this misunderstood, highly selective sledgehammer calls sin to the burden.
And that's a tough one. Guilt, you know, guilt is hard to say, oh, I shouldn't have it. Well, it's something you got to learn and, you know, do the best you can not to beat yourself up over it and not have it so much. You know, as good people, you know, we're more likely to be doing good than bad. So in one sense, that's one reason why not to feel guilty. And two, it's just part of being human. It's part of that, the experience of being here is having to deal with that guilt.
And to not have guilt, I mean, you know, I'm not really that for the Bible myself. I just don't, I think it's just a very confusing and misleading, you know, there's some good stuff in it, but, you know, there's so much other stuff in it that is so, like, you know, misleading. It's not definitely the Word of God. And, you know, people do use the scriptures to judge people and to make other people wrong. And I'm so happy that Novus Spiritus, you know, knows that life is hard enough without adding sin and guilt and hellfire and damnation to, you know, help us get through. We don't need the fear. We don't fear God. We love God, Mother and Father God. So that's my own personal opinion about the Bible. It looks like in the chat
that's
room, a lot of people are being... Sorry, go ahead.
What, in the chat room? No, oh, okay. I was going to say, you know, along the lines of the Bible, it reminded me of idioms. You know, every language has idioms. Some use them and emphasize them more than others, and it distorts the meaning of the interpretation. And you cannot an idiom literally. That's the whole point. The idiom is if you look up the definition of it, and the Bible's full of them. And it's interesting how, at least for me, how the Bible's gone through several translations, and you know, how do you translate an idiom properly? How do you know when it is and when it isn't? And it was interesting to learn that recently for me, it was interesting to learn that the some of the Middle East, even to this day, still use idioms in their language on purpose. It's to it's just their method, part of their society is using the idioms to emphasize and they overemphasize the purpose of the verb or the phrase that they're talking about. They use it to overemphasize and to make a point. And yet, you know, the Bible's full of it. One of our recommended readings is Wamsa's translation of the Bible, and there's some really interesting changes in how things can be interpreted if after Lamsa had taken from the original Aramaic, the Bible from the original Aramaic, and you know, interpreted all these idioms that were in there. So that was really interesting, and it makes a quite a bit different, how do you say, interpretation or understanding of what the Bible's trying to say.
I was saying that in the chat room, Denise, I guess it's her first time. Thanks a lot for joining us, Denise. And she is hoping to get some hypnosis to help her with her situation. So you can find out if there's a hypnotist in your area that has been gone through Sylvia's hypnosis certification course. And you can call the office here, or you can email teresa@sylvia.org. That's Teresa's Theresa at sylvia.org. Or just call the office and we'll see if there's a hypnotist in your area so that you can, you know, possibly use that as a tool to let go of whatever went on in your childhood. And we're really glad that you joined us tonight. Everybody, we're glad everybody joined us. So, shall we continue?
We can.
Okay.
Good. Here we go.
Just do it, Tom.
Here's the next part. Okay, we will do it. Just do it.
Children.
There is no such thing as a child whose welfare is none of our concern. Thank God that fact is becoming more and more obvious, and laws and organizations to protect, defend, and rescue children throughout the world are growing stronger by the day. While we still have a long way to go, there's a glimmer of optimism to be found in today's increasing insistence that neglect, abuse, disrespect, or disregard toward any child is unacceptable and a crime against all of us who have even a shred of compassion and morality. Also, as spirituality continues to spread and flourish, so does the realization that children are our closest human link to our own immortality on the other side. Baby spirits arrive directly from full busy lives at home after a very difficult, deliberate decision to return to advance their progress on the eternal path toward their greatest potential. Inside those tiny, fragile, pre-verbal bodies live souls as ageless and timeless as ours, with memories of past lives and of the other side that are fresh, clear, and unedited. And those memories linger in their conscious minds for years before the business of life on Earth overwhelms them. It's no different than our returning from our extended visit to a place we deeply love. For quite a while, our bodies may be back from the trip, but our heads and hearts are still preoccupied with that other wonderful place. Because they're so much closer to the other side and their past lives than we are, children are the most psychic humans on Earth, and we can learn as much from them as we'll allow about home, the spirit world, reincarnation, astral travel, and all the other marvelous bridges between here and eternity. What's sadly fascinating is we have endless evidence that children are already very sophisticated beings when they arrive, and yet we carelessly ignore that evidence, mislabel it, make silly excuses for it, and or fail to explore it. If you've spent any time with young children, you know that they have interests, gifts, fears, phobias, and preferences that make all the sense in the world when you take past lives into account, and no sense at all when you don't. Children are born mesmerized by trains, or pirates, or aviation, or tall ships, or the California Gold Rush, or astronomy, or countless other things to which they couldn't possibly have been exposed in this life. They're born with athletic or musical talent, or a natural affinity for carpentry, or electronics, or architecture, or fashion design, or countless other skills non-existent in the rest of their family. They're born frightened of dark, water, or heights, or bridges, or being alone, or crowds of people, or small places, or countless other places or circumstances they've never confronted this time around. Phobias not necessarily shared by anyone else they spent time with. The lame explanation that all those unique qualities are thanks to some combination of genetics and environment falls apart pretty quickly when you can't find a likely source for those qualities in anyone or anything around that child. Children are the best argument of all that, in fact, reincarnation is just plain old common sense logic. From the time your children are able to verbalize their thoughts, ask them questions in an encouraging tone about anything they express special interest in, or even about previous lives or the other side in general, such as, "Who were you before this?" or, "How many other mothers have you had?" Or, "Tell me about the place you were before you came here." Don't force or suggest answers. Just let them talk or not talk, at their own pace, so that they know you're receptive to the conversation whenever they're ready. Never judge the answers you get, but do yourself and them a favor. Record the answers in a journal or on tape so that years later, when their memories have inevitably dimmed, they'll have comforting proof that there was a time when they knew all about their own immortality. I've already discussed cell memory at some length, the emotional and physiological impact the spirit's memories of past lives can have on us in our current life. As our spirit reacts to the familiar experiences of being in a body again, even pre-verbal children with such fresh past life memories and such open and guileless minds are very susceptible to the negative effects of cell memory, and very easy to cure as well. I've dealt with hundreds and hundreds of children suffering from cell memory problems, most of them referrals from doctors who have had no success with traditional treatments. Let me repeat. I will always urge everyone to seek traditional medical and psychiatric help first when an illness presents itself, especially with children. Don't ever misread anything I say as a claim that we legitimate psychics are substitute for those professionals, or that we're instant cure-alls for every physical or emotional problem. Just one example was a 4-year-old girl named Chelsea, who was born with severe asthma that didn't respond to any medications her doctors had tried. What conscious memories she had of past lives didn't reveal any answers. So I did a hypnotic regression on her, a breeze with young children, by the way, and she very quickly got to the root of her asthma. In the incarnation immediately before this one, she had been a rancher named Jack Shepherd, who'd been wrongly accused of stealing a neighbor's horse and hanged for the crime. It was a slow, horrible death, with Shepherd desperately and unsuccessfully struggling to breathe, a cell memory that poor Chelsea's spirit had retained and brought with it into this tiny little girl's body in the form of an illness that literally took her breath away. I was able to help Chelsea the way I've helped hundreds of other children, whether or not they were even old enough to talk, by speaking to the wise, mature spirit mind of the child's subconscious during either hypnosis or sleep. You can easily help a child close to you in exactly the same way, before or after cell memory problems have started showing up. And it really is as simple. Once or twice a week, while the child sleeps, sit down quietly beside them and in a low voice that won't wake them, tell their spirit mind, "Precious child, may all the joy, wisdom, and lessons of your past lives be your constant companions to help you through this life. But let all the pain, fear, illness, and negativity from those lives fall away into the past where they belong, and then be released forever into the healing purity of the Holy Spirit's sacred white light." Look at it this way. On the off chance that I'm right, what possible harm can it do to try? Because they're still so fresh from the higher vibrational frequency of the other side, and because they haven't yet been told that there's anything inappropriate or odd about it, the vast majority of children interact with spirits and ghosts as if they were imaginary friends. You'll be missing a fascinating experience if you dismiss these imaginary friends with a patronizing, "That's nice, dear," instead of asking questions and finding out everything you can about them. Beyond the name of the imaginary friend, where did they come from? What do they look like? How did your child meet them? Have they known each other before? If so, where did they know each other? What do the two of them talk about? Once you get a few clues to the identity of your child's imaginary friend, you can enhance the experience even more by checking out property records, photographs, and family histories. I can't begin to guess how many children I've worked with who were able to point out their imaginary friend in snapshots of decades-old family or neighborhood gatherings, or how many of their imaginary friends' names turned up on an obscure branch of the family tree from several generations ago, or on lists of previous owners of the land on which the house now sits. In other words, just pay attention. One of the most consistent facts of the spirit world is that spirits leap at every opportunity to be seen and heard, and children, with their heightened, unedited psychic senses, provide some of their best opportunities. Astral travel comes naturally to most children for the logical reason that it's what they've been accustomed to at home, where we get where we want to go by simply thinking ourselves there. The easiest time for astral travel is during sleep, when the conscious mind won't interfere. And children's favorite destination when they astrally travel is the familiar, blessed sanctity of the other side. If your child tells you about a dream that's even slightly in sequence with a beginning, middle, and end, as opposed to scattered images that don't make much sense, chances are it wasn't a dream at all, but an astral trip instead. Pay particular attention to stories about playing with other children on a vast stone stairway in front of a gleaming white stone building, and about walking in a beautiful lush garden, often with a grown-up with whom the child felt safe and loved. The steps leading to the Hall of Wisdom and the magnificent gardens of the Hall of Justice are visited several times a week by the spirits of children who have incarnated, and the gardens are treasured spots for children's spirits to hold reunions with friends and loved ones at home. The crowds of children playing on the steps of the Hall of Wisdom have been known to be so rowdy, in fact, that my spirit guide, Francine, once asked me to speak to my son, Chris, about his being a little too playful during his frequent visits to those steps and disrupting the constant stream of spirits coming and going from that sacred hall. Children don't limit their astral travel during sleep to trips to the other side. They also enjoy checking in on friends and relatives and people in places they've known in past lives. Again, listen for dreams that have a sequential order, especially if they involve flying. Flying almost always indicates an astral trip instead of a dream. Please keep a written or taped record of your child's so-called dreams. You'll learn so much about your child and about their easy access to the other side and their past lives and the spirit world that you experienced at their age, but sadly don't remember. And they'll cherish proof of those dreams long after their memories of them have faded. Now try this beautiful affirmation. Dear Father and Mother God, please help us protect our children, just as you protect all of us who are your children. Teach us to keep them safe from bodily and emotional harm, and to celebrate the joy and dignity of knowing that with every step they take in this hard, rough school of earth, your hand will never leave theirs, and your light will let them see the path ahead more clearly, no matter how much it winds through the inevitable threatening darkness. We are blessed by the very presence of your smallest and youngest arrivals among us, and it is our oath to you to care for them as surely as if they were all our own. Amen.
Very nice words. I love the story about Francine talking to Sylvia about Chris being disruptive on the other side. It's like having the principal knock, you know, call you on the phone and say, "Hey, would you please take care of your kids, please?" I'm like, "Oh my God," that's kind of funny in a way to me. The other thing that was reminded me of, you know, talking about kids and remembering their past. There's a really neat. There's a couple of them, but one of the Discovery Channels, there's a documentary about a family, mother, father, and a son, that my son kept getting all these memories of being a pilot in World War II. And he kept coming up with all these details, and his dad was just not believing this, but he was very diligent about keeping detailed information of what the son had come up with, you know, the information. And thought, sure enough, he, you know, this couldn't be true. This couldn't be true, but sure enough, every time his mother would find something or was researching, she would find something that validated what the son was talking about. And none of this stuff he could have, you know, researched himself. It was a really cute story. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, there's some good show. Actually, someone posted on the chat about what kids say about the other side. And there was a link there. And talking about the little people, our children and stuff, we were praying for Susan's son. I haven't seen any post from Susan how her son is doing. I hope he's doing well. Because definitely sent lots of prayers to him. So, Susan, if you are on the chat room and want to post and let us know how your son's doing, that would be great.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad you brought that up to, you know, remind us of, you know, who we've been sending energy out to. We have a meditation next. You want to get into that?
The what? The meditation, yes.
We have a meditation.
We love the meditation.
Okay. Great. All right. You know, everybody can now take a minute and find a seat, get comfortable, and get yourself ready for meditation. For those of you that are new to listening to our meditations, we encourage you to sit in a comfortable position, feet flat on the floor. And what we do at church services, you know, our spiritual services, you can put your hands on your lap with your palms facing upward, and that's just asking for God's healing energy and loving energy to come through you. And so I'm going to get the meditation started here.
Before you started, Tom?
Yes, go.
Susan responded and said that her son is doing a little better. He's not talking about ending it anymore. Still has a way to go. And thank you. So we will keep our prayers going. What is his first name, Susan? And you're welcome. Our pleasure.
That's good.
His name is John. Susan's son is John. Okay, so we'll continue praying for John. All right, let's do the meditation here.
All right, and of course, if you're driving, please just listen in. Don't, you know, of course, don't close your eyes, and if everybody's ready, here goes. Yeah, I know. Here goes the meditation.
This meditation will help you put guilt in perspective. Surround yourself with a gold, purple, and white lights of God's protection and loving spirit until you feel those lights warming you, relaxing you, helping your breath become deep, rhythmic, and nourishing. From where you're sitting, a white bridge slowly rises up and extends itself, welcoming and safe, over a sparkling, glowing, rushing white river. You rise from your chair, curious and eager to experience this magnificent span of white, and find a large sealed bag at your feet. You pick it up, straining at its weight, and its weight alone defines it for you as all the guilt you've been carrying that you've taken upon yourself, and that's been slowing your steps along the path of your spirit's journey, making it so much harder than it needs to be. Carrying the bag, still straining, you begin to walk toward the bridge, seeing the gold flex in its railings and arches, glittering and dancing in the bright sun. The instant your bare feet touch the cool, smooth, refreshing surface of the bridge floor, you feel strength surging through you, and your steps become confident and sure as your purpose on this bridge washes over you like a soft whisper of grace. The heavy bag of dark, hurtful guilt is in your arms as you walk to the railings of the bridge and look down into the white, glistening river below. A powerful rush of pure, cleansing, sacred love. A mist of its spray kisses your face, reassuring an embrace of understanding and permission, and your purpose growing stronger with each breath. You open this bag of emotional debris and lean just far enough over the railing to turn the bag upside down and empty it into the white water. As each dark guilt hits the surface, the water rolls slightly and then consumes that darkness, just as all light consumes darkness. And you watch as this beautiful river, this flowing embodiment of the omnipotent Holy Spirit, absorbs and dissolves one by one, each hasty word, each misstep, each unintended hurt you've been carrying for so long. You stand and watch until the bag is empty and useless, and you feel grateful tears in your eyes as you see that this blessed white river has accepted the heaviness in your spirit without being compromised or darkened. Just as God so lovingly holds our imperfections in His arms without growing any less perfect Himself. Your burden mercifully gone, you look for the first time to the far side of the bridge, where an emerald green meadow dotted with a prism of wildflowers spreads like a soft carpet for as far as you can see. From the center of the meadow, a small group of people start walking toward you. You stand watching, unsure, until they come closer and their faces come into focus. Each one sad, each one a little afraid, but each one present, available, looking to you for some sign of whether or not it's worth their time to stay. You recognize them now. These people with whom you need to make things right. People pushed away, not by their choice, but by your own guilt. And as you meet their eyes, you know that only you can take away their sadness and their fear, because you're the one who caused it. For a moment you hesitate, wondering if you have the strength and courage. But you look down one more time into the perfect, uncompromised white water of sacred purity where your own dark burden disappeared forever. Then back to these anxious faces again. And your steps towards them grow stronger and braver as you move to complete the relief you've already begun on that perfect, gold-flecked, sparkling bridge God built just for you. Now, armed with that strength and courage and the momentum from this meditation, bring yourself back, open your eyes, feeling lighter from the burden of guilt you left behind, and make real the rightness you began with each one of those people you saw waiting, sad and afraid in the green meadow. This affirmation will give you strength. I am part of God, just as He is part of me. Today I will honor Him by learning from guilt without embracing it or perpetuating it. I will lighten my burden by taking action to resolve what guilt I've earned and what unearned guilt I'm carrying. I now release forever into the white light of the Holy Spirit.
Wow. That's always a great feeling of picturing in your mind when you're meditating, releasing things, you know, letting things go, and it feels really good.
Yeah, it feels wonderful. This philosophy, Sylvia, it's an awesome, empowering philosophy. And it's basically the way that we live our lives. And, you know, Sylvia is doing better. She, you know, she's back at the rehabilitation center and getting stronger. She's actually going to do some appointments tomorrow from there, which is means that she's feeling better and doing good. So we're just very happy about that and can't wait for her to be back with us and possibly on the road. I know Denise was talking about going to Lincoln, California, and Denise, you can volunteer if you want. If you want to come help, you know, sell the products, you know, for Nova Spiritus, that would be great. You know, Sylvia just turned 77 years old, and her concern is that her legacy, the Society of Nova Spiritus, continues to empower individuals with this positive spiritual philosophy. And basically, because of the economy and the lack of sufficient financial support, Nova Spiritus was basically, you know, had to downsize to this little office in Campbell. And we only have 2 phone lines. Some people are getting used to not having we don't have the prayer line at extension 107, but people can go to novus.org, and there is a tab that says prayer. And the last, if you click on that, then the last option is prayer chain. And if you click on that, then you can put your name or someone else's name, you know, on the prayer chain, the prayer line, so we can all pray for them. We all like to pray for everybody on the prayer line at 9 o'clock, no matter where you are. But we really want to ask for people to support Nova Spiritus, you know, to donate financially to help Nova Spiritus continue. If you are in the area that we have spiritual services now here in Campbell or in Renton, Washington, or Las Vegas or Michigan, you know, please, you know, attend the spiritual services and support it. Bring a friend or a loved one so they can also learn more about this philosophy. If you aren't, and then be part of a study group. A lot of people just study, you know, by themselves, with themselves, I say. Or even better, if you can see if there's a group in your area, then you can study with other folks, you know, learning more about this Gnostic philosophy and helping empower yourself with the tools and the knowledge and better able to help others. Definitely, you know, I think you'd be amazed how much information and knowledge that you have when people, you know, start asking you questions about, you know, God or spirit guides or the other side, life on the other side, or, you know, why we're here, you know, what we're doing here. So there's another tab at novus.org that says support Novus. You can use a credit card, or you can use PayPal there, or you can always send a check or money order to Novus at our new little office here in Campbell. And definitely appreciate all the support, all the love. You folks are just awesome on the chat line. Susan appreciates all the prayers for her son John and just says thank you, and she loves you. So you know, keep connected. You know, keep being part of Nova Spiritus. Again, thank you for joining, you know, the New Spirit Radio Show. This is really exciting that we can have this connection, and anybody in the world, you know, can be part of this internet radio show, which is awesome. And Doesn't seem like anybody really wants to call in and talk with us, but that's okay. Maybe we'll figure out a way that people will want to call in and share maybe about their study group or their experience with the philosophy, how they have, how it has helped them, or how they have been able to help others. That would be wonderful.
Maybe it's our bad breath.
All right. Well, you know, we love the study groups, and you know, Reverend Mel wants to remind folks that, you know, she does have her Nova Spiritus page and petitions and prayers. We're going to start posting more on the Society of Nova Spiritus Facebook, you know, more of the information, and you know, maybe even do, you know, they can actually send more posts out to people that might be interested in this philosophy. So share the knowledge. Just share the knowledge. And I have one other thing. I think next week I want to have like a little surprise. It's, you know, we've been talking about blessings from the other side, and I have a really nice little tape. It's actually from Francine, Sylvia's spirit guide, and it's called Life After Death, A Tour. So I think next week we're going to have a little audio clip from Francine, and that's always so special, and such a special thing that Sylvia has done is allow Francine and Raheem to come in and give us this information and this knowledge. And so we got a really cool surprise for next week. So what else, Tom?
What else? Let's see. I wanted to add about a little bit about the, you know, study groups. Is, you know, it's very good about relating experiences. You know, people that are listening to the show, I wonder sometimes, you know, what's the draw other than the fact that you and I are on. Oh, wait a minute. No, I think it's Sylvia, huh? But on study groups, the one of the big benefits is relating to each other, relating with each other, and you know, sharing what each of us has gone through. And sometimes we learn what others go through. That I thought of it as today. I was thinking about this earlier today. What, you know, this sounds similar to on the other side. When we're on the other side, we get to merge with each other to share our experiences, and that's a form of when you do that, you if that satisfies your curiosity for that experience, you don't have to come into life. If it doesn't, you know, satisfy it, it then, you know, warrants, you'll probably want to come in and experience a life. However, it's a similar thing here when you're, I think it relates in that fact. I'm trying to describe it because I'm not sure if I've ever put it in the words, how you talk with somebody and share ideas, and I think it's more meaningful. You get the point, or your soul picks up on it because somebody else is working on it as well.
And Denise in the chat room said that she was sharing about Nova Spiritus with someone. She was talking to someone about Nova Spiritus today and going to take him some links or a book, or, you know, direct him to novus.org. There's a lot of wonderful information on there. You could spend hours on there. Information about Mother God, Father God, our chart. You know, a lot of good information is on novus.org. So. And good for you, Denise. Way to share the knowledge.
Oh, as a reminder, too, we heard something about people still wanting to chat afterwards. We are working on, in the process of building a chat on novus.org. So it's not up yet, but that's a possibility for people that want to keep chatting after the show. So that's in the works.
Great. We'll look forward to that. And that would be great to have it as in novus.org. Keep us all connected and supporting and loving each other. So We're about ready to wrap it. It's we went a little bit over, so thank you again, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you to everyone that tunes into the on-demand archive shows. We really appreciate that you take the time to come listen to the show and support Nova Spiritus. And Tom and I are just honored that we can have this radio show and feel more connected and support each other and love each other. So thank you from the bottom of our heart. God bless you all. We love you all. Let's continue to share the knowledge and take care.
Very good. Good night, all.
All right. Good night, everyone. Love you. Thank you.